Olivia Rodrigo has distributed Plan B pills at her recent concerts. Yikes. Also, cannibalism making a comeback, and we've got an update on that from last week. Wow. And Dylan Mulvaney, unfortunately, has a new music video out, and it tells us exactly what he thinks about women. We've got all this and much more on today's episode of Relatable. Hey guys, welcome to Relatable. Happy Thursday. Hope you're having a great week. Okay, as always, we've got a lot to talk about. A lot to talk about. We've had a lot of monologues this week because there's always so much content to get through. And while I love my interviews so much, sometimes we just have to dedicate several hours to getting through all of these subjects. I always get that question. How do you have something to talk about every day? How do you not run out of things to talk about? That is never, ever, ever the problem. The problem is having enough time to talk about all the things that we want to discuss and everything that's going on. So we've got a lot today. We'll try to get through it in under an hour. That's always my goal. But before we get into it, let me just remind you of this beautiful, cute new merch that we've got on the merch shop, alliemerch.com. You're not enough. But Jesus is in a very springy design and springy colors. We've got hats, we've got crewnecks, we've got t-shirts. The t-shirts are comfort colors. The sweatshirts are super comfortable. So go to alliemerch.com. Also, just a reminder that you can use my code Ally at blazetv.com/Ally to get $30 off your subscription to Blaze TV. We've got a debatable episode up right now, Catholic versus Protestant, a 2-hour really interesting conversation, but we've got a lot more coming down the pipeline. It's not all debates. Some of it is going to be marriage conversations with people who have been married for a long time. We're going to be talking about some touchy subjects like sleep training. We're also going to be talking about things that we really can't talk about on YouTube because we'll just get penalized and our videos will be taken down, like vaccines and vaccine injuries and things like that. And so you want to subscribe. It protects us from censorship to have an army of people that are behind the paywall. That means we're not beholden to advertisers, even though all my advertisers are great, but we're not beholden to YouTube or to any of these platforms that like to kick people like me off because we say things that they don't like. So it helps out a lot if you subscribe at blazetv.com/Ally, and then you can use that promo code Ally for a discount. All right, let's get into it. A lot of you are sending me this story over the past couple days. It is absolutely grotesque and silly. Olivia Rodrigo, she is a singer. I think she's popular with mostly the Gen Z. I think she's probably in her early 20s and she sings a few cute songs. I know a couple of them myself. They're very catchy. She is, I'm sure, a very talented person. She is able to attract tens of thousands of young people to her concerts every tour. And she has been an outspoken advocate for abortion, for killing children inside the womb. And she recently, at a concert in Missouri, distributed free Plan B at her concert. If you don't know what Plan B is, it's also known as the morning after pill. And women can take it after having sex the night before, unprotected sex, and it bills itself as a pill that can stop you from getting pregnant. But it really just depends on what is going on in your body. It can also just make the womb inhospitable for a fertilized egg. So it doesn't actually stop fertilization in many cases, but it can make the uterus so inhospitable for that already fertilized egg that egg then dies. Of course, the woman wouldn't even know that that happened. But that is also how it can work. And by the way, that is also what can happen in hormonal birth control. There is an abortifacient characteristic both in Plan B and in hormonal birth control, which is why for those of us who believe that life starts at conception, at the point of fertilization, these are very ethically, morally questionable pills to take because of what it can possibly do to life that is already created. Now, some people debate whether conception is really fertilization when sperm meets egg, or implantation when that fertilized egg actually implants into the uterus, when a woman would, after a few weeks, be able to get a positive pregnancy test. Because there are fertilized eggs that don't implant, and a woman would probably, she would never know that she were pregnant. And so there is some debate there, but really I think that implantation is like another arbitrary standard for when life actually has value. Anytime that we decide that after the point of fertilization, that's when it really becomes a person, that's when it really has value, you get into very arbitrary and slippery territory. And I didn't always know that. I didn't always believe that. My views have changed over the years. Actually, I was probably kind of agnostic on that. I was open to the possibility that maybe life starts at implantation, maybe life starts at fertilization. I didn't really know or care. But of course, just like with anything, the more you think about it, the more questions you ask, you realize any point after that, it just opens the door to saying, well, maybe it's not implantation, maybe it's sentience, maybe it's viability, maybe it's whatever. And so I think the safest and most logically and morally consistent position is to say that that human being is a human being from the point of fertilization and therefore is entitled to human rights, which makes things like hormonal birth control and Plan B problematic when you have that belief system. Nevertheless, Olivia Rodrigo, surprise, surprise, does not share our belief system. This is according to Variety. She has made good on her promise to expand awareness and access to reproductive health care. Let me break that down since that's a euphemism. It is, abortion has nothing to do actually with reproduction. It has nothing to do with health care. This is the consequence, the result of reproduction. You have a child, a human being, and you are killing him or her, but that's neither reproduction nor healthcare. Inviting the organization Right By You to distribute free emergency contraceptives, condoms, and information. And that's also another euphemism, emergency contraceptive, because that's not really what's happening. Condoms and information about abortion to fans on her Guts World Tour. Concert goers at her March 12th show in St. Louis were able to grab a package that includes two boxes of Julie, an emergency contraceptive that helps prevent pregnancy when taken within 72 hours of unprotected sex. So again, talking about preventing implantation there, as well as cards with QR codes linking to abortion access resources and the Missouri Abortion Fund. Fans also reported free condoms and stickers being passed out. Yikes. Okay. Here is Olivia Rodrigo announcing that she would be handing out these morbid party favors at her concert.
And for the North American leg of the Guts World Tour, I'll be partnering with the National Network of Abortion Funds to help those impacted by healthcare barriers in getting the reproductive care they deserve. To learn more about reproductive health resources and how you can help, visit abortionfunds.org, or you can stop by the National Network of Abortion Funds table at your local Guts World Tour stop.
See, that's how you know that we're talking about such a grotesque and barbaric practice, when they can't actually say what it is. The use of euphemisms is always an indication that truth is too harsh for people to hear, or the truth is too unpersuasive and not palatable enough to be able to distribute to the general public. And so that's why they have to use euphemisms like abortion. Abortion is actually a euphemism when you think about it, but reproductive health care, reproductive justice, access, equality, autonomy, choice. These are all euphemisms to cover up what is objectively a very brutal and bloody practice. Missouri has banned abortion except when the woman's life is at risk or her physical health is seriously at risk, and doctors actually have to prove that to be able to sign off on an abortion. This is not the first time that Olivia Rodrigo has voiced her opinion to thousands and thousands of young girls about the importance, she would say, of abortion access. Here she is in June of 2022 after the Dobbs decision was released, which overturned Roe v. Wade. So if you didn't hear that, if you're just listening, the captions are on the screen for YouTube. But if you're just listening to that, she said our body shouldn't be in the hands of politicians. I hope we can use our voices to blah, 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 protect abortion. And so she is a very influential young person, a very influential artist, of course, has millions of followers on Instagram, I'm sure TikTok as well. And she is attempting to shape the minds of her young, very malleable, very impressionable audience to make it seem like abortion is not only okay, but great. And of course, I mean, all of this is pointing to the fact that she is basically encouraging not just premarital sex, of course, but teenagers having sex and teenagers having unprotected sex. That's the message that you are relaying when you are passing out Plan B. They might say, well, we passed out condoms too. Is that in any way appropriate for the young audience that she has? I mean, she has girls listening to her who are probably 12 and 13 years old. Now, that's a parenting problem if we want to get into that. But think about even Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. I wasn't allowed to listen to them when I was super young, and I think for good reason. If you listen to some of their lyrics back in the early 2000s and you look at some of their album covers and what in the world they were wearing, even they would have never done something like this. And this is a little bit different because Olivia Rodrigo doesn't even look risque or sing really risque lyrics in the same way that Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera did at times. That's part of this, is that she kind of looks innocent. She looks very girl next door. She's very cool. And I think that is part of the strategy here. That's part of the marketing campaign, that even sweet Olivia Rodrigo is telling her young audience that abortion and Plan B is all good, that it's so important to fight for this. I mean, the absolute state of the United States, that you can go to a concert, you can worship this woman, and you can glorify child sacrifice. I mean, this is basically like a Malek concert. That's basically what's going on here. She might as well have Malek on her stage and have everyone there bow down to it, because that's essentially what is going on. So parents, we just have to be so careful. I know it is like so hard to be, and look, I have young kids, and so I'm not saying that I know exactly what it's like to parent a teenager or a preteen, but I can imagine. I mean, I was a teenager not that long ago, and I am a mom, so I can imagine that it's so difficult to continue being the parent that's like, no, you cannot do this. We have this boundary. We have this rule. I have to protect you from this, what you listen to, what you watch, how much time you spend on your phone, if you even have a phone, if you have access to social media, the things that we can talk about, the things you wear, all of that. I mean, that all falls within the realm of parental protection, rules and boundaries, parameters that we put in place for the good of our children. And I know that progressives out there like to have this fantasy that basically parents should just come alongside kids and be their cheerleader no matter what. That's not what parenting is. That's not healthy parenting. That would not be creating healthy kids. That would be creating very irresponsible adults. And so part of our job as parents in not just disciplining, but discipling our children is helping them filter the things that they are consuming. Now, of course, there's more and more trust that's granted the older kids get. But these young women or these young girls, rather, who are listening to this music and going to these concerts with the consent and the celebration of their parents are doing such a disservice to them. We cannot protect our children from everything. We cannot put them in a bubble. We can't pretend like there's nothing going on in the world. But gosh, we are absolutely failing if we are allowing this young little artist to influence how our children think about abortion, what our children think about sex. We've got to do a better job of laying a better foundation. I know it's hard, and your kids probably feel like the odd ones out, maybe in their communities or in their schools, who don't listen to all the same things, who don't watch all the same things, who don't have all the same things as their friends, who have these basically secular parents that just don't care what they do. But it's worth it. Man, it's worth it. I can tell you, as someone whose parents protected a lot of, you know, the things that I listen to. Now, honestly, like I would say, this is what I would say. One, I'm thankful for that. My parents are going to think that this is crazy that I'm saying this now. I actually think that there could have been even more parameters around the things that I watched and the things that I read. I know it's crazy. Teenagers today don't read nearly as much as we did back in the day because we didn't really have social media when I was a teenager. But I think about like the trashy fiction that I was reading, like Twilight, but even worse than that, when I was in high school. And I actually think that there could have been some parameters around like what I was reading. So I'm telling you now, as someone who had, I would say, strict parents growing up, that not only am I thankful for a lot of those things, but I actually wish that there had been even more protection when it comes to what I was consuming in my most impressionable years that really kind of shaped what I thought about relationships and romance and set unrealistic expectations in a lot of ways. And so that's part of our job, parents. So protect your kids from Olivia Rodrigo and the absolute degenerate demonic filth that she is spewing at her concerts. Okay, let me pause. Let me tell you about our first sponsor for the day before we get into the rest of this craziness. And that is, of course, Carly Jean Los Angeles. Okay, I'm so excited to show you guys my outfit because they just sent me some new stuff. So this sweater, isn't it super cute? It's very comfortable. I love it. It feels like cashmere. It's so high quality. And then I'm super excited about these pants, these wide leg pants. These are called the Holland jeans. If we can go to the wide shot, then people on YouTube can see. These are the Holland jeans. And let me tell you, ladies, so I'm 5'5". Apparently that's shocking to some of y'all because you thought that I was 5'8", which I will take as a compliment. But I'm 5'5". These jeans are pretty long. I'm wearing boots and they still touch the ground. So just know that they're pretty long. For you tall girlies out here, they'll be perfect. But I love how they look. I can wear them with boots and they're fine, but I might get them hemmed a little bit, but they're super flattering wide leg jeans. They come in black. That's what I'm wearing, but they've got all different wash of jeans. Highly recommend. You guys know how much I love Carly Jean Los Angeles. I am wearing their clothes every day if I'm not wearing my own merch. Owned by a company, or it's a company owned by a family who loves the Lord, shares our values, and they're clothes that make you feel good in every season of life, and you just can't beat that. Go to CarlyJeanLosAngeles.com, get 20% off your entire order when you use code RELATABLE. CarlyJeanLosAngeles.com, code RELATABLE. Okay, so speaking of human sacrifice, which is what abortion is, we've got a cannibalism update. What am I talking about? Well, last week we discussed this article from New Scientist that claims we need a more subtle view of cannibalism. We need to be a little bit more nuanced about it. We shouldn't have so much feel so much stigma toward cannibalism because it's just a part of some people's culture. It's just what some people do. And we put that in the context of Christianity. And when we look at the spread of Christianity over the years, especially the boom of evangelism that happened in the late 19th century, early 20th century, we see wherever Christians go, whatever tribe, whatever country Christians go to, they put an end through the spreading of the gospel to cannibalism, to human sacrifice, to child sacrifice. These are pagan practices which have been throughout history very, very common in the non-Christian, non-Jewish world. And Christians spread this radical message from the inception of the church that, whoa, 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 all people are made in the image of God. Therefore, they have innate, unique value. Therefore, murdering them is a sin. And also, all people are equally dead in sin apart from Christ. All people can be made alive in Christ by grace through faith. That radical message changed the world. It changed the world in pagan Greece and Rome. It changed the world in every nation where Christianity has set foot. We've put an end to child sacrifice, an end to human sacrifice, an end to cannibalism. We talked again last week about what the Bible has to say about those things, why it's a sin, why God sees it as wrong and barbaric and evil, and why it is completely incompatible with Christianity. Well, apparently we, as a country, as a journalist class, we're just continuing down that path of trying to destigmatize cannibalism. And now it is part of a conversation about immigration because there is, once again, much upheaval in Haiti right now, which is absolutely tragic. It is a beautiful country that has just been wrecked nonstop by corruption, by gang violence, by murder. And it is all driven by a deep ancestral belief in voodoo. Voodoo, which is a demonic practice of witchcraft, is very ingrained in Haitian culture. There's a saying that I read in an article yesterday that I believe it's that they're 30% Catholic and 70% Protestant or something like that, and then 100% voodoo. So basically, there are a lot of people in Haiti that claim Christianity, different forms, but all of them, most of them, I would say, I'm sure it's not true of all of them, but many of them still practice demonic witchcraft. They still practice voodoo. And historically, one part of voodoo, one part of all forms of paganism, has been human sacrifice, child sacrifice, and cannibalism. Now, I am not saying that most people in Haiti practice cannibalism. I'm not saying that they are all cannibals, but it is a part of what is going on there. It's part of why so many people are fleeing Haiti because of just the massive violence that's going on there. And I can absolutely sympathize with the desire to flee that disaster, with the desire to flee that corruption and the threat of violence and to try to find refuge. Absolutely. At the same time, America has every single right to say, you know what? I think that we need to pump the brakes a little bit when it comes to accepting masses and masses of people, basically unvetted, from a country that is so doused in violence, whose cultural practices are so different than America's. Now, I am not saying that people cannot legally claim asylum. That is a legal process. Someone who tries to just come over to Florida illegally, that's not claiming asylum. Someone who just tries to cross the border illegally because what's going on in El Salvador or Haiti or Cuba is bad, that's not claiming asylum. Those people are not refugees. There is a legal definition to being a refugee, to being an asylum seeker. There's a legal process. There are ports of entry that you can go through and try to do that legally. People who come here illegally are not refugees and they are not asylum seekers. So they can claim asylum legally. That's fine. I understand that. I understand why they would want to do that. There are other countries that they could go to as well, like the Dominican Republic, but a lot of them, and by the way, you're supposed to, if you're going to claim asylum and you truly need asylum, you're supposed to go to the closest country to you where you can actually claim asylum. But a lot of Haitians are coming here. And while I do think that they can claim asylum legally, go through that process and everything, and I wish it was a more efficient process, we can debate that. The fact of the matter is, any country, including the United States, absolutely has a right, and I would argue a responsibility to say, but wait, who are these people? If they're coming from a country that is doused in voodoo and in a lot of cases, barbarism, are we so sure that we are not letting in people that are perpetrating that violence? Are we so sure that we are not letting in people who practice cannibalism? This has been the conversation online over the past couple of days because of this surge in Haitian migration over the past few weeks. People have been sounding the alarm about what could be accompanying this huge surge in migration. So just to give a little background, Haiti has declared a state of emergency after gang violence and anarchy has broken out. In some ways, this is nothing new, but they have experienced increased instability since July 2021 after the assassination of their president. There's a gang leader, Jimmy Charizier. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He is a former national police member in Haiti who was known as Barbecue. He seized power and has vowed to continue fighting until Prime Minister Ariel Henry resigns. And so there's a lot of political stuff going on there that is causing the recent surge in migration of Haitians. And a hearing the other day, Representative Matt Gaetz expressed concern about these Haitians coming into Broward County, coming into southern Florida, and either staying there or spreading out into the rest of the country, of course, illegally. And so he was asking, what is the plan? What's the plan to repatriate these people? How are we going to take care of this? What are we going to do to stop this surge? Because this is actually good for no one. So all of this is what caused the conversation about Haiti and cannibalism. Ian Miles Chong tweeted, there are cannibal gangs in Haiti who abduct and eat people. We are not supposed to talk about that because of cultural relativism. The entire country has now entered a state of chaos after gangs attacked two prisons, setting many criminals free. 80% of the Haitian capital of Port-au-Prince is now controlled by these gangs. And so other people started talking about, oh my goodness, there are cannibal gangs. How do we know these people are not going to come in the United States? Elon Musk retweeted Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh tweeted out his podcast episode, and the title was Haiti Descends into Chaos as Our Borders Remain Wide Open. And then Elon Musk retweets that and says, cannibal gangs. Well, NBC is very mad about this, that people are talking about potential cannibal gangs and that cannibalism is not something that we should worry about. And so they released an article saying Elon Musk and right-wing influencers use quote-unquote cannibal claims to smear Haitian migrants amid crisis. They say, as Haiti faces an extreme political and societal crisis amid a wave of intense violence, tech billionaire Elon Musk and right-wing pundits online are weaponizing unverified claims of cannibalism coming out of the conflict to advance a political agenda on migration. So basically saying that people are just lying about this. In some videos, the most prominent examples being at least 2 years old. This is NBC admitting that their headline is basically false, trying to imply that all these right-wing influencers are lying about cannibalism. They say, in some videos, most prominent examples being at least 2 years ago, alleged members of violent gangs in Haiti appear to bite into human flesh. Experts said these videos are likely part of propaganda campaigns designed to scare rivals and terrorize local Haitians rather than a reflection of common or normalized behavior. Okay, that's better. One former armed group went by the name Cannibal Army. Okay, so we are acknowledging that cannibalism is at least part of the gang violence that's going on there. And yes, America has a right and responsibility to protect its own country, to protect its own citizens. I know that the empathy shaming, the empathy bullying position is to say we have to have unending and unfettered compassion for everyone, everywhere, all at once, all at the same level, that all leads us to the same conclusions of accepting absolutely anyone into the country who wants to be here. I understand that is the position, but that is not a feasible position. That is not a wise position. That is not a responsible position. That is not how God set up the world. God gave us borders. He gave us laws. He gave us governments. These things are good. They are protective. They give us order, illegal immigration, even just unfettered mass migration is disorder. It is chaos. It is anarchy. And while we can absolutely have compassion for anyone who is trying to flee violence, absolutely, and while we can set up legal means to accept a certain number of refugees and asylum seekers, we are not indebted to the rest of the world. No country is indebted to the rest of the world. Zimbabwe, Kenya, Haiti, Brazil, every single country has a right and responsibility to put the interest, to put the safety and the well-being of their own people first. Every single country, not just America. It's not about bigotry. It's not thinking that you're inherently better. It's not even about not wanting people that from a particular country, although I think it's fine to make assessments about the culture of a country and the moral practices of a country before you allow people in. Absolutely. But it's really just about what your responsibility is as a government. Of course, our government currently under Joe Biden does not believe that. They believe in selling out the American citizens for the sake of other countries. But this is part of the result, the chaos, and the consequences of not having strong borders and not having firm immigration law. And we've become so deluded by this cultural and moral relativism that we're not even willing to say that maybe two cultures don't mesh. Maybe there are cultures that are better than other cultures. Maybe there are practices that are better than other practices. Maybe there is an actual objective morality, and we have to consider all of these things when we consider what is best for our country. We have to be able to balance what is responsible with what is compassionate. We can't just be led by empathy. That actually leads us to make really stupid decisions that risk the well-being of our own country. Also, we've just got a lot of rewriting of history going on here when it comes to Haiti. We've got NBC saying that the Haitian Revolution was a very successful revolution. It was the most successful slave result in modern history. Of course, I guess you could say that it's successful in that it was a liberated country. I'm not justifying everything that the French colonialists did by any means, but I don't think that anyone could look at Haiti and say it's a success. It has been a place of oppression for its own people. It has been a place of corruption and upheaval and chaos since that so-called liberation, since that revolution. And it's been destabilizing, not just for the people that live there, but for the world. And so we're all just supposed to pretend that everything is relative, that everything is fine, and that we can just have this big melting pot and that there are no real countries and no real borders and no real privileges to being a citizen versus a non-citizen. But that is a recipe for violence and disaster. So we can pray for the people in Haiti. We can pray for a better government, pray for better leaders. We can pray for an end to the violence and the corruption. Again, we could advocate for legal means to seek asylum and to claim refugee status without saying, yeah, we should just let everyone in who wants to come here because things are bad other places. That is just not a sustainable, logical, or responsible position to take. But this is what happens when we are kind of into neo-paganism in post-Christianity. We start to get articles saying, well, maybe we should just accept cannibalism. Maybe it's just an innocuous part of people's culture. Maybe everything is just the same. Nothing is better than anything else. And the only sin is saying that there's sin. That's what happens. And we will see when Christianity leaves all the things that we took for granted, all the rights, all the protections, all of the assumptions that we held because of Christianity, those will also go out the window. And we will see. We will see how much harm awaits. Okay, let's get into this next story. Let me tell you about our next sponsor for the day, and that is Preborn. As you know, a baby's heart begins to beat at just a few weeks after conception. And a lot of times in that first ultrasound, which is between 6 to 8 weeks, you can not only see that heartbeat, but you can hear that heartbeat. And studies show that when a woman sees her baby on the sonogram screen, when she hears that heartbeat, she is so much more likely to keep that baby if she had been abortion-minded. That's why Preborn exists. They're a network of clinics across the country. They provide lots of resources for young pregnant moms, but also they provide these free sonograms, but they rely on donations to be able to provide these things to these women. If you donate to Preborn, just $28, you are covering the cost of a sonogram and you can save a life. Donate whatever you can. Go to preborn.com/Allie, preborn.com/Allie. Make your donation today and save a life. preborn.com/Allie. Okay, I want to talk about this story, and I'm not going to play the videos that have been circulating on Twitter because they're too disturbing, but I just want to draw something out. I just want to give you my analysis of this because there's a few things I think that we can learn. So I hate bullies. I have always hated bullies, bullies of all kinds, people who take advantage of someone's vulnerability, someone who takes advantage of someone's disability, someone who picks on someone that's not their own size, someone who is taking advantage of someone's weakness. I absolutely hate bullies. Honestly, if I didn't have the perspective that I do of the world, if I was not a Christian, I would probably be a liberal. Actually, that's 100% true, I think. If I were not a Christian and I didn't have the Bible as my guide, just feelings-based, I think I would be a liberal because I would have this very simplistic view of the world as oppressed versus oppressor, and I would think that I was on the side of the underdog by saying that I'm against these big corporations or I'm against the patriarchy or I'm against these big systems and I'm for the underdog. I would probably be able to delude myself into thinking that that's what liberalism or progressivism is if I were someone who just followed my feelings, because I have big feelings and I feel things very deeply and I am very swayed by people's stories and by their testimonies, as most people are, but I think as especially women are. And so I hate bullies, and I think I could see myself thinking that being a progressive is being like anti-bully. But thankfully, the grace of God shows us that the progressive mindset of those things is simply not based on actual truth. So whenever I see stories or see videos of bullying, I cannot take it. I got to log out of Twitter for several days because I just can't take stories of vulnerable people being bullied. So even though that Next Benedict story from a couple weeks ago where the young girl who identified as non-binary, where she died after she was bullied, I mean, that story broke my heart, even though it turned into this whole like trans activism narrative, it still broke my heart that this person supposedly was bullied. Now details have come out. We're not even sure that that's true. But it broke my heart because I hate seeing kids bullied. I hate bullying. I mean, that's a sin problem, but it's also really a parenting problem. This permissive parenting that Abigail Schreier has talked about has made kids less understanding of other people, actually less inclusive, less tolerant, which is interesting. After years of SEL and years of empathy training of young people, I actually think that they are more self-centered and even more aggressive than ever before, because kids actually need direction, not just permission. And so I think that that's part of what's going on here. Also, just bullying just speaks to the degeneration of our society. So here are a few examples that I've seen circulate over the past couple of weeks. There is this awful story that has been going around of this young woman named Kaylee, this young girl. She was attacked by a mob of students in Missouri. She is currently, as far as I know, she is currently still in the hospital in critical condition. She's reportedly in a coma. She has brain swelling. She's fighting for her life. I could not get through the whole video. I am not going to play the video for you, but this young, thin little defenseless girl, she is having her head slammed into the concrete by a much bigger student, much bigger teenage girl. And I'm actually shocked that she has not already died. According to the Daily Mail, she was a 15-year-old female high school student. We don't know what started this. We don't know why this happened. It happened at Hazelwood East High School last Friday, about 2:30. There's been a GoFundMe that's been started for her because this is just absolutely awful, grotesque stuff. And then I saw this other video. Both of these, I think, were originally stories that were broken by libs of TikTok. A 7-year-old little boy was brutally attacked after being bullied by an older student on the school bus. I have a lot to say about that. First of all, a 7-year-old should never be on a school bus. Maybe that was fine 20 years ago. That's not fine today. Oh my gosh. Also, young students should never share a bus with older students. That's also a recipe for disaster. Also, where are the adults in this? Also, what are the parents doing of these insane bullying stories? So these stories, however, have not become national news. They're awful. They're on video. We see exactly what's happened. There is nothing that could have provoked this kind of violence. And yet, I have not seen, at least right now, I've not seen them picked up by NBC. I have not seen them picked up by CNN. This hasn't become a national trending story the way that Next Benedict's story have. And why is that? It is because these stories don't go with the narrative. Because in these stories, they are white victims and they happen to be black perpetrators. And unfortunately, I see stories like this every week that never become national news. And I honestly, it's so hard for me to even watch these videos and be on social media at all with this. But I see these kinds of stories come up and I never see them go viral. I never see them become a national conversation. Why is that? Because, of course, we are supposed to believe that the white person is always on the side of the oppressor and that the black or brown person is always on the side of the oppressed. Now, I'm not saying, because I don't know if this is a trend, I'm not saying, oh my gosh, this is a systemic problem where white kids are routinely being beat up by black kids. I don't know if that is a pattern that is continually happening. I know that I see it a lot. And if there were stories or videos of the races reversed, I know I would know about it, because you know that that's going to become national news. You know that that is going to go viral. You know that every woke evangelical influencer that you follow is going to be posting about it. If the races are reversed, we would have a whole conversation about how racism is still so prevalent in our society today, that black and brown kids are still oppressed by these white privileged kids. But we're not having those conversations about those kinds of videos and stories because we don't see them. And I think the fact that we don't see them means that they are probably not happening at a very high rate, because it would be very difficult for a story like that to not catch the attention of activists, of Attorney Crump, of Al Sharpton, and everyone in the media who is completely invested in this narrative that Black and brown people in this country are oppressed and that white people are privileged and on the side of the oppressor, that we have systemic, pervasive racism against Black and brown people in this country, and that they are constantly victimized by it on a daily basis, which is not true by any objective metric whatsoever. And yet when something like this happens, we're not even supposed to talk about it. It can't become a conversation because, oh, maybe it's just a one-off. No, you just don't care because it's a white kid being beat up. I think we should care when anyone is beat up, no matter what their color is. But I am especially incensed that stories like this do not get the attention that they deserve because the victim is white. That's wrong. That's partiality. That's sinful. Or we should just be treating all of these stories as local stories, no matter who is the perpetrator, no matter who is the victim. They either all need to be national stories or they all need to be local stories. But how the mainstream sees it is that if it's a Black victim, that it has to become a national story. If it's a white victim, it can just be a local story, just a one-off. That's crazy. That's sinful. And that's wicked. I mean, these young kids, 7-year-old boy, 15-year-old girl, fighting for their lives. And these kids that are beating up on them, who happen to be Black, they're so much bigger than them, just hitting them as hard as humanly possible. Again, I think this is probably the fourth story that I've seen in the past 2 weeks with a similar type thing. Always fighting in the same way, hitting their head as hard as possible, slamming their head into the concrete, slamming their head into the floor. Always a few against one. The adults doing nothing, someone filming it, someone laughing. Again, I don't know if this is a pattern as far as it, as far as the races are concerned, but I know that it is something that's happening that not enough people are willing to pay attention to because it's really uncomfortable. And you do have to wonder, if all the constant anti-white rhetoric that is so insanely pervasive in society today, if that has something to do with it. If these kids know that there's not going to be consequences for it because of their race and because of the race of the victim, then they're probably more likely to do it. So are the DEI CRT policies that have been put in place that basically say, oh, we can't discipline because it disproportionately affects one race of students, if that has something to do with this. If the constant talk about white oppression and constant talk about white privilege and Black and brown people being oppressed, if that has an effect on the mentality of these students and has worked to justify the treatment of the mistreatment of white students, I don't know. I mean, I think it's worth asking, but it's interesting that the next Benedict story was used to slam people like libs of TikTok, even though she had nothing to do with it. And even though this next Benedict girl, she was not actually killed by the bullies. We have no idea if that had to do with anything to do with her identity. It's actually come out now that she may have killed herself. She may have died by suicide, which is absolutely tragic. But that, for some reason, was put on the shoulders of libs of TikTok, even though she had no connection to it whatsoever, but were not allowed to connect the anti-white rhetoric to the targeted bullying of white students by Black and brown students. That doesn't make any sense. I'm just saying it should be the same kind of analysis across the board. I'm just saying that we should be equal in our measures. And I think we need to be very careful about the kind of vitriolic rhetoric that we use towards any group of people, including white people. I know that this crazy equation is like prejudice plus power is what racism is. And so because Black people don't have power, they can't be racist, which is just ridiculous. It's an arbitrary definition. The fact of the matter is you can be hateful. You can hate. And God measures it the same. I promise that God doesn't say, well, that person might be hateful and violent, but they have a higher melanin count, and so they don't have power. It's not prejudice plus power, so that doesn't really count as the racism that I hate. Of course not. God is impartial, and he hates partiality, as we read over and over again in Scripture. He cares just as much about the lives of white people as he does about black people. You know that? I know. That might blow your mind. I just want to make sure that you actually live that way and that you actually think that way and that the way that you respond to news stories reflects that knowledge, okay? Because it seems that that type of partiality within the Christian world has been acceptable, that our definitions of justice, our definitions of equality, our definitions of right and wrong have actually been colored by partiality against the white evangelical and the white oppressor due to a completely just ignorant and erroneous understanding of history and a completely factless understanding of the current day problems that are going on. The fact of the matter is bullying is always wrong. Hatred is always wrong. And I'm telling you, it's not going to go in a direction that is healthy for the country, that is safe for the country, if we are continually castigating and categorizing all white children in the same bucket of oppressor. That's not going to head us in a good direction as far as so-called racial reconciliation and racial peace goes. I think we can see that that's already making things a lot worse. So unequal weights and measures are an abomination. And we just have to make sure that how we talk about things is reflective of that reality, especially when it comes to the issue of race and ethnicity, crimes, justice in this country. All right, evangelicals, all right, let's remember that. And shame on you, all you pastors who have talked about things like white privilege and the white oppressor. You are part of this problem. You have made things worse. Okay, let's get into this last story that we got for the day. Let me tell you about our next sponsor. That's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They're the only one. They've been great supporters of the show. I'm very thankful for them. They offer dependable nationwide coverage, giving you ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. You can keep your number, keep your phone, or you can upgrade. The team will help you find the best plan to fit your needs. Plus, you can get free activation when you use offer code Allie. So go to patriotmobile.com/Allie. Use offer code Allie for free activation. patriotmobile.com/Allie. Okay, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to talk about him, but I feel that I have to. I don't know. On the one hand, I'm like, should I? Okay, I'm just going to talk about it for a little bit. It is Dylan Mulvaney. We haven't uttered his name in a while, actually, on here, because I understand the position of like, why even give him more attention? He's obviously seeking attention. His PR and marketing team obviously want him to be talked about because then he's valorized. And I understand that. But at the same time, he is such a symbol of the depth of depravity of the transgender revolution that I think it's important for us to just check in every now and then. Now, I still have not solved this mystery, how sometime last year, I've never interacted with him and I've talked about him a few times, but that's it. So he blocked me. He blocked producer Bree. He also blocked our social media person at the time. And it was so weird because Bree had not been on the show at that point. Our social media girl had not been on the show. Their identities were not public. They didn't have anything in their they have private profiles. They didn't have anything on their profile saying that they work for Blaze or work for Relatable. Their handles aren't even their full name. So somehow, I think it's the back end of Instagram somehow helped Dylan Mulvaney figure out who exactly is working on my show and blocked them. Isn't that wild? So he's got a lot behind him, and now he has become a pop star. He has a new video called Days of Girlhood. Remember what I said yesterday? Any grown man that is calling him a girl is sus to the nth degree. And also, he just recently did this comedy bit where he was like, oh, conservative women are sad that their kids are calling me mother in my Instagram comments. Okay, if you're a grown man who wants to be called mother by children, you have serious issues. That's like all the red flags, every single red flag raised. But he's put out this music video, and I'm sorry to curse your ears and eyes, but here is Sot 3. Mom got me into the world. Sister taught me how to girl. Goodness, I'm not gonna lie, the beat kind of slaps. Like I kind of have it stuck in my head a little bit. Okay, so let me say a couple nice things. One, the beat slaps. Two, he actually has IRL a beautiful voice. You know, he was on Broadway. He's an actor. That's actually part of why he has been able to don this character of being a girl so easily and seamlessly, and that's how he accomplishes the like doe-eyed poor me persona. But sometimes you see it, sometimes it comes through and you're like scary. So I will say that, like, he actually has a beautiful voice behind all this auto-tune and the computerization of his voice. He has a beautiful clear Broadway voice. This does a huge disservice to that. But the reason why I want to talk about this is not to like promote him, but I just want to talk about what he thinks and what I think a lot of men who identify as the opposite sex, what they actually think womanhood is. So he's saying these are the days of girlhood. And as you know, he did the whole 365 days of girlhood thing where he went on TikTok and he's had like facial feminization surgery and all of that. So here's what being a girl means to him. And by the way, like, also you can just hear in the tune and in the music video that this is supposed to appeal to young girls. So he says Monday, can't get out of bed. Tuesday morning, pick up meds. And then they open a medicine cabinet and you got a bunch of prescriptions. Cursed. Cursed. Oh my gosh. That's so awful. Wednesday, retail therapy, cash or credit. I say yes. Thursday had a walk of shame. Okay, so being a woman is being a hoe to him and being mentally unwell. So check and check. Okay, didn't even know his name. Weekends are for kissing friends. Friday night all over spends. Okay, Saturday we flirt for drinks, playing wingman to our twinks. Ugh. Sunday, the Twilight soundtrack, use my breakdown in the bath. Okay, so mentally unstable, financially irresponsible hoe bags. That's what Dylan Mulvaney thinks that it means to be a woman. Mom brought me into the world, she said, or he said. Sister taught me how to girl. Best friend coached me how to text. The boy toy that I'm dating next. Girls do all. Show me the way. They're why I am a girl today. So that's what Dylan Mulvaney, someone who I think probably hates women and thinks of women just in very honestly misogynistic terms, that's what he thinks of femininity. That's what he thinks it means to be a female. Of course, he will never, ever be a woman. He will never, ever be a girl. He has not experienced girlhood. He does not know what it's like to grow up as a girl. He grew up as a boy and he grew into a man. And he still is a man. And God made him that way. And that is good. He is made in the image of God. He matters. He has value. And I want him to know that about himself. I'm also very concerned that he very much looks like he has an eating disorder. And I don't say that lightly. I don't know if I've ever even said that. But that is something that is on display that I'm genuinely concerned about. I'm concerned about what's going on behind the scenes. It's obvious. Look, it's obvious in this music video that he is very masculine and that he is a man. And that is something to embrace that can never change. No matter what surgeries you go through, no matter what hormones you have, you will always be a man, and that is good. It is good to be a man. I know society sometimes tells us differently, but it is good to be a man. And so I want him to embrace that about himself, to embrace the fact that he has been made in the image of God, to embrace the fact that Christ died for him, that he can be made alive by grace through faith in Christ. Like, that gospel is accessible to him. He matters just as much as everyone else. And him not only flaunting this degeneracy himself as a way to make himself feel better about the choices that he's made, but also promoting that to other people, to children, that is a dark, dark sign of the times. And I just pray for God's mercy. I really, really do. So let's keep praying for Mr. Dylan Mulvaney. Okay, let me just tell you about our last thing, and then we will head out of here for the week and be back here on Monday. Okay, Blaze Originals. They've got their third installment in the Blaze Originals series available only to Blaze TV subscribers. Texas versus the Feds, how the elites are using the border crisis against us. So you might remember that there was like a border standoff a few weeks ago, and we didn't know what was happening with that. Basically, Texas was like, no, we are not taking this razor wire down. And we thought it would be a bigger deal, but we didn't really hear about it. If you want to know what really went on there, what was going on, then you have to watch this. So if you go to blazeoriginals.com, you can use code Allie for $30 off your Blaze TV subscription. Go to blazeoriginals.com, use code Allie for $30 off your subscription. All right, this was a very wide-ranging and quite controversial episode. That's all we got for this week. We will be back here on Monday.